magical place we could go. So close your eyes and make a wish for the skies with the angriest, flappiest birds, and the seas with ridiculous fish. The Dutch Arcade Show is here again. It's Friday night and I'm with my friends, Eli, Jerry, and Mike most of the time. Mike, come on, let's go to the Dutch Arcade Show.
Hey, what's up, and welcome to the Touch Arcade Show. I am your host, Jared. Eli is out traveling today, so I'm taking over the hosting duties, and I do have with me a special co-host guest that all of our normal listeners should enjoy. So if this is the first time you're listening to the Touch Arcade Show, we are toucharcade.com. We are your number one source for all mobile gaming news, iOS and some Android mixed in, and you can come to us to find out all the coolest games to be playing on your mobile device. We are primarily supported through Patreon. And so if you visit toucharcade.com or sorry, patreon.com/toucharcade, you can subscribe for as little as $1 a month. And that goes towards helping us keep the site going and the podcast going. And it does include some special perks like a video edition of this podcast where you can actually see us playing the games we're talking about in real time. I'll take this chance to apologize for not having a video podcast this week. Eli has that whole rig setup thing going on to do the video recording. So with him not around, we are unable to do that. So sorry for our Patreon subscribers for no video. But I'm happy we're able to do a audio podcast. And as I mentioned, we have a very special guest today. You may know him as one Carter Dotson, who was a longtime writer for Touch Arcade and then got himself a new, nice, full-time job, what, last June maybe? And then things have not turned out great in this week for that. So, Carter, welcome. Good to have you back in a Touch Arcade uniform, at least for the time being.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me. Yeah, the job, unfortunately, company PvP Live shut down this week. So I'm suddenly looking for work again, and glad to be contributing to Touch Arcade again, at least in the interim.
Right.
You know, I'm definitely. You know, I'm starting to find some freelance stuff. I'm really glad to be contributing to Touch Arcade again. Really glad to be writing about mobile games regularly again, because the job after a couple of months went from writing about mobile games to suddenly we were prioritizing this online tournaments platform we had. Yeah. And it was interesting work. Not exactly you know, what I signed up for, but you know, it was pretty cool, and it was a steady paycheck. You know, steady paycheck, come in, work 9 to 6, and you know, go home, and that was pretty nice. And you know, I thought, oh, this is going to be a nice steady paycheck, and then company shuts down.
Yeah, that's I mean, it kind of just took everybody by surprise, including some of the higher ups, right?
Yeah. Everyone was really surprised, but apparently there was a whole business decision with some of the high ups about it, and you know, unfortunately, I guess there wasn't much of us could do about it. Like I said, we were all surprised. We're all looking for work now, but you know,
it's tough, and you know, it's tough when businesses. I mean, if you're not making money, it's hard to keep it going. But I thought PvP Live seemed like it really sort of grew a pretty big following in the time it was running, and seemed like a lot of people pretty disappointed that it was shutting down.
Yeah. A whole lot of people were sad that it was shutting down, because honestly we had like a superior product to every other tournament site that was out there. I mean, just the quality of the interface, our live support was great. You know, there's always these jerks that, you know, don't like the decisions our admins made, but they did great work, and we had features like, you know, live chat on the site, and also a map bands feature that was like miles ahead of what anyone else had. And it's just sad that it's all gone away.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like startups a lot of times remind me of some of these mobile free-to-play games that come out where you're like, okay, this company dumped a ton of money into making this super crazy production value mobile game. And then they're hammering money towards user acquisition and stuff like that. And inevitably, you know, you grow a user base, whether it's large or small or whatever, where people get very attached to this certain game or whatever. But if the numbers just aren't working out, you know, they'll just shut that thing down out of the blue and kind of leave everyone hanging. And, you know, all the work and stuff that they put into it is kind of all for naught. And that's always kind of crazy to me. But I don't know. You see it happen a lot. So.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think it's just the bean counters wind up making their decisions sometimes, just want to cut their losses, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the happy outcome from this whole thing is that you're back with us, and that's very nice. And hopefully things will work out for you in the future, but you'll always have a home here at Touch Arcade. So, and now the cat has finally jumped off my lap. Let's move on into some iOS gaming discussion stuff. I've rounded up some news stories. This is usually Eli's job, so I probably picked far too many news stories to talk about, but I figure we can kind of quick hit some of these things. So we have learned that Super Hexagon, a mobile gaming classic, will be getting iOS 11 and iPhone 10 support, and they're beta testing that stuff now. I just think that's a good shout out because Super Hexagon is one of my favorite games of all time on any platform.
Yeah, and super influential. As far as, like, you know, these kind of like difficult high score chasers when I feel like a lot of games kind of tried to ape its style and its high difficulty, and you know, the fact that it was unavailable on iOS devices for a while is sad, but you know, glad that it is coming back at last.
Yeah, and I obviously having an iPhone 10, it's like it really sticks out like a sore thumb when games don't support the full screen. And there's some games where I'm willing to put up with it, but a lot of games I'm just like, you know what, I'm not even going to play you. That sounds pretty, I don't know what to call it. But I'm happy to see that this is going to get full screen support too. So Super Hexagon definitely kicked off the Twitch arcade game craze back in the day, and happy to see it living on. Next story I have here is we've been dipping more into the Nintendo Switch stuff. And so we've been kind of posting little reviews or little news bits here and there that relate to Nintendo Switch things. And so this week, Eli actually posted a little mini review of SteamWorld Dig 2, which actually came out a while ago. But, man, it is fabulous. So if you have a Nintendo Switch and you like Metroidvania, platforming, digging, resource management, or, well, not resource management, but crafting sort of stuff games, SteamWorld Dig 2 should be right up your alley. So you can search for that story on our site and check out a little info about that. And then another game that came out this week that was also on Switch that we had talked about a little bit is Dandara, which launched on all platforms, all on the same day, all at the same time, all at the same price. So that was kind of an interesting thing that you don't see every day. Many times games comes from desktop or console. They come to mobile way later. So it's kind of interesting to see that simul launch. So we have a full review of Dandara, the iOS version. And then I think, was it you that wrote the piece about the Switch version and which version you should get?
Yeah, that was me. And yeah, you want to read that just for the verdict. But yeah, it's definitely not a case of where, oh, if you have the Switch, you should play it because of you know, physical controls. Like, the game definitely feels like it was designed for touch screens. Like, I even felt that way when I played the early version of it at GDC last year at Raw Fury's weird little spot in San Francisco. Yeah. And it feels really natural on the touchscreen. But if you have the Switch, it also supports the touchscreen. And if you have an iOS device, then it also supports controller. So, you know, there's a few decisions beyond that you have to make if you're choosing which platform you want it on. But the cool thing is, no matter which platform you buy Dandara on, you're getting the Dandara experience. And I'm curious to see how releasing at the full price works out for them on mobile.
Yeah, it's an interesting situation because, like I said, you know, the mobile ports of things usually come much later. So by that time, you've probably bought it on another platform, and you look at the mobile version, and it's like, cool, one I can take with me. I'll buy this also. It's not often you have the situation of like, dang, I need to choose which platform I want this thing on. And I thought it was interesting. The dev itself, who was talking in our forum threads, was saying, you know, someone was asking which version should I get. And his answer I thought was kind of interesting. He was like, you know, the touchscreen one, like that's, it works great on touchscreen, but then that's your only option. The Switch version is physical and touchscreen. And so you kind of get the both best of both worlds there. And so that's sort of an interesting little perk to that. But I'm with you in that when I played it, it works with physical controls, but it feels more natural, I think, in touch controls. And so I think if you wanted like the ultra portable on your phone version, you can't go wrong with the iPhone version. But I don't know. I don't think you can go wrong getting any version of it. So,
Yeah, for sure. I think it just comes down to which platform am I most likely going to play this on? Which one fits into my life best?
Yeah, yeah. Which could be multiple copies. Let's throw that out there too.
Hey, that's an option too.
So we'll chit chat about Dendar a little bit more when we start talking about game discussion. But take a look at the Switch Arcade stuff we've been posting. If you have a Nintendo Switch in addition to your mobile device, or are just interested in reading stuff about it, we're going to try and start posting a little bit more stuff about the Switch. And then this came out this week, Florence, which is from Annapurna and is Ken Wong's new game. And Ken Wong is the guy who was mainly the guy behind Monument Valley. And so this Florence finally gets a release date and it's up for pre-order. And then they also released this launch trailer, which looks very cool. But yeah, this is an interesting game. I'm not really sure. I wasn't really sure what it was. It's kind of like I don't want to call it a visual novel, but it sort of is, I guess. It's very interesting. The artwork on it is awesome, kind of this hand-drawn illustration style. And then you have all these sort of little mini-game things that you're playing and stuff. And I don't know, just looks very cool. Did you have a chance to check out the trailer at all?
No, I haven't had a chance to check out the trailer. And I actually really regret not checking it out at PAX South at the Annapurna booth. I saw the banners, but I didn't realize that was Ken Wong's game. I played a couple other games at their booth, like that Donut County game that's coming to PS4 and PC, but I just missed my chance to play Florence. But you know, the artwork on Monument Valley and the experience on those games was just incredible, and I'm really fascinated to see what Ken Wong and his new studio are doing with Florence.
Yeah, and excuse me, I Annapurna, I feel like, too, is like, man, they're coming out gangbusters because they brought Flower over to iOS last year. And then they also published Gorogoa, which is like one of my favorite games of last year. And so I always like seeing companies that focus like pretty heavily on quality releases. So it kind of seems like that's right where they're at. So Florence should be coming out. What was the release date of it? The 22nd or the 18th? Later this month. Let's just leave it at that. But if you haven't seen the trailer yet, you should definitely check it out. Let's see. Avernum 3 Ruined World came out on desktop actually last week. And the mobile version should be coming out, they said, before Q1 ends. So that should be by the end of March, I guess. And if you're not up to date on what Avernum is, it's a old school styled RPG series from Spiderweb Software, who is basically just one guy and his wife that's been making these super crazy, in-depth, old school kind of like dungeon crawler sort of RPGs for desktop for many years. And then they started bringing their games to the iPad in like 2011, I think. And so there's several of the games out on the iPad. And then Avernum 3 is actually their newest. It's actually a remake of one of their older games. And that came out on desktop last week. And then that will be coming to iPad too. And so the entire trilogy will be complete on iPad, which is pretty cool. But if you know Spiderwebsoft, or you have played any of these games previously, or you just really like old school style, you know, hardcore RPGs like this, then you should definitely be on the lookout for that. That'll be coming hopefully before the end of next month.
Sounds like some nerd crap to me.
It's some nerd crap, and man, they're not my style games at all. I wish that they were, though. Like, I really appreciate what they do, but I've just never been into those style of games. And boy, am I happy that we have a couple of people on our staff that do like them. Eric's super into them, and Tassos, I think, really likes those style games too. So if not, I wouldn't even know what to do with myself with one of those games. But I think they're very cool. So, and let's see here. Jurassic World Pinball is coming to Zen Pinball and Pinball FX 3. To celebrate the original Jurassic Park's 25th anniversary, this story made me feel old because I was like, Jurassic Park came out 25 years ago? Man, that is rough.
Yeah.
Anyway, Zen Studios is super good at taking licensed IPs and then making cool pinball tables out of them. They've done all the Star Wars stuff and, I don't know, you name it, all the Marvel things. And their style of pinball is very much not simulation-based. It's very much doing things that would not be possible in a real pinball table. Which can irk you if you're looking for that hardcore simulation, but I think most people kind of appreciate that you're kind of pushing the boundaries of what's possible because it's a video game and not a physical thing. And so in the case of Jurassic World Pinball, you're going to have dinosaurs fighting each other while you're playing pinball and stuff like that. All sorts of fun things happening. And if you watch the trailer, it's got doesn't have the original music, which is kind of a bummer, but it does have all the original voice clips that they've taken straight from the movie. And there's three different tables. One's based on Jurassic World, which was kind of like the – it's not really a series reboot because it's a sequel. But, you know, there hadn't been a Jurassic Park game or Jurassic Park movie in quite a while. Jurassic World was kind of like the bringing it back and making it prominent again after Jurassic Park 3 sucked. I think everyone can agree that's the case.
Yeah.
but anyway, Jurassic World I actually like quite a lot. And then the new one, the sequel to that, is coming out in June. And so I think that's kind of what this all is tying into. But there's a table based on Jurassic World, so you'll see kind of some cool scenes from that movie and the characters and stuff. Then there's one based on the original Jurassic Park. And again, you get to relive some of the famous scenes, like trying to outrace the T-Rex that's chasing after you and cool stuff like that. And then there's a third table that's also – I couldn't really see what this was based on in specifically. It kind of seemed like it's just based on general Jurassic Park mayhem. The pinball table itself is called Mayhem. So, you know, dinosaur fights and other good Jurassic Park-y things happening in that third table. And so, yeah, I like all Zen Pinball stuff. I like Jurassic Park. This is a match made in heaven for me. And this should be coming out, let's see, the movie's in June, and the tables all come out, I know I wrote this down, February 20th on all platforms, so keep an eye out for that. Rules of Survival was the top downloaded iPhone and iPad game in Q4 2017. I have not been able to get into this, and I don't play PUBG on desktop, and so... I don't know. This is another one of those games where I feel like I appreciate how cool it is and I wish I could get into it, but I just can't. But that's pretty impressive that it's the top downloaded game, something like Rules of Survival. I mean, that's kind of a hardcore game, you know?
Yeah, but I think it just goes to show like how big of a craze Battle Royale is right now, that that a Battle Royale game is number one on mobile, or at least, you know, given those qualifiers, it's the number one game on iPhone and iPad, but like there's a lot of people that are downloading on Android as well. And also that NetEase has kind of cut into their own market with like two other games out there that are Battle Royale. And then they also did, I think it was underappreciated, on like the same day they released like three Battle Royale tiles, they released that update for Crusaders of Light that added a Battle Royale mode into that.
Wow. So they went hard on Battle Royale stuff.
Yeah, I was actually writing about that for PvP Live, and and I was like, okay, there's the update for this Crusaders of Light game. I've written about this a couple of times, and it's like, oh, hey, Rules of Survival, I'll loop this in. And then I saw Knives Out came out, and then Survivor Royale, and was like, this story keeps just getting even more insane.
Yeah, and I always thought it was crazy when they first came out and they launched, you know, all three so close to each other like that. And we were always talking about like, oh, you know, which one are they just going to let them fight it out and see which one is most popular and then just support that one and shut the other ones down or something like that. And so far, I mean, Rules of Survival has obviously been the winner in popularity, but they've been maintaining all of them. And so I almost feel like, what is the point of that? Like, combine your resources into just focusing on one game, but I guess it's working out for them. So I don't know.
I guess. I mean,
Yeah. Rules of Survival, if you wanted a PUBG-like on your mobile, then you can check it out for free. And kind of related to that, I'm jumping forward a little bit, but today we posted that Bluehole has released both of their PUBG-inspired variation mobile games in China. And we've been following this story for a little bit. They announced via like a live stream thing several months back that they were bringing legit, not actual PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, but different named games that are pretty much the same idea, which is also kind of an interesting strategy to me, because it seems like if you have one of the hottest titles in the world and you have that name recognition, why aren't you going hard just calling it PUBG Mobile or something like that? But whatever, it seems to be working out for them. These titles launched in China and instantly took over the 1 and 2 spots in the download charts. So that's kind of crazy. I guess, let's see, one of them is called PUBG Army Attack, and that focuses on land, sea, and air battles. And then there's one called PUBG Exhilarating Battlefield, and that's more of like a traditional PUBG experience. So I guess maybe they are leveraging that name if they're subtitling them off of the PUBG. But I can't really tell because the titles are in Chinese. So I'm just going off of Daniel Amat on Twitter, which is where we got this story from. He's always an excellent source of any video game news. So anyway, yeah, PUBG stuff, super, super hot. And that doesn't seem like it's going to slow down anytime soon. And it's soon to be taking over mobile even more than it has already with stuff like Rules of Survival. So,
yeah, and it's very interesting, like the fit on mobile, because like these like Rules of Survival is basically just a battle royale game with touch controls.
Yeah,
like, it's not even necessarily all that much adapted for it, like something like I was thinking like Guns Royale
right.
was, which had like, you know, 20 people. But as we've kind of seen with MOBAs, I think people are fine with, you know, with having like, you know, 100, 120 people battle royale. They just want that experience on mobile as closely as possible, or even it's just a case of where people they want these games on mobile no matter what. That's more important than
no matter the concessions.
No matter the concessions, I guess.
Yeah, I think it kind of splits people into two camps where there's certain people that are like, okay, I like this game on desktop or console, but if you're going to bring it to mobile, make it mobile-y, make it touchscreen friendly, blah, blah, blah. And then there's people that's like, take the exact game, put it on mobile, slap virtual controls on it, I'm good to go. And yeah, based on Rules of Survival's popularity, I think a lot of people are getting along okay with that whole virtual control thing. So yeah, interesting to see the popularity of these things on mobile. Our next news story is something I just want to hit on pretty quickly. Street Fighter 4 Champion Edition coming to Android this month. And you're going to get an exclusive character, Ooh. Dan Hibiki, which is the famous joke character of the Street Fighter series. Back in the 90s when Capcom was battling back and forth with SNK, you know, releasing fighting games every, I don't know, other week, basically. Capcom took a stab at SNK by creating Dan for Street Fighter Alpha, and he was kind of a mixture of two of SNK's Art of Fighting series characters, and he was made to purposely suck to make fun of SNK. So they were like, here's Dan. This guy has a fireball that doesn't even go 2 feet in front of him. All his moves are weak, and he's terrible. Ha 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 ha. We're poking fun at our rivals over at SNK. And it's kind of funny because over the years that has kind of turned Dan into this fan favorite, because there's no better, you know, there's no more bragging rights than if you beat somebody with a purposely sucky character like Dan. And so, you know, Street Fighter fans have grown to love Dan over the years because he's kind of a badge of honor if you're really good with him. And so it's interesting. They're going to throw him into the Android version of Street Fighter 4 Champion Edition, and no word on if he'll make his way to iOS or not. But I'm jealous of Android people. I'd like me some Dan, and I don't know if that'll happen or not. But anyway, if you're on Android and you like Street Fighter, Capcom's famously been giving you the cold shoulder for years on mobile Street Fighter games. So you're finally going to get one with Champion Edition that comes out sometime this month. So that's pretty cool.
The one thing that's weird about that coming out on Android is that it kind of makes the Champion Edition release on iOS really weird, because it's like, well, it seemed like they were just like quickly going and, you know, taking the code base from these versions they released back in, what, like 2011 and updating them for 2017, which kind of excused, you know, some of like the low frame rate stuff. But now it's like, if this was enough of an endeavor that, you know, they can update it for Android, it's like, well, you know, maybe you could go through and make it better. I mean, to be fair, it's still Street Fighter 4 on mobile, which is totally fine because it has Blanka, which is not in Street Fighter 5 yet. It needs to happen, which is going to happen soon, but not soon.
Everyone needs some Blanka.
I know, he's the best. And I don't know, it's weird, but hey, at least the Android people are gonna get it, which means I can download it on Android. I bought an Android phone a couple months ago.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I always thought it was weird, Capcom's sort of mobile strategy with their Street Fighter stuff, because, you know, they released those games way back when on iPhone, and they played pretty well, and they were popular, and it released, you know, the first one released at $10 and topped the charts, if I recall correctly, and so, you know, I'm sure it made a good chunk of money, and then, like, a year later, as they do, they released, like, a slightly, you know, enhanced version that had online play and stuff like that for another $10. And so it seems like to have been a very popular game and a good moneymaker. And then they kind of just stopped making Street Fighter games and stopped really updating them or anything like that for years. And so when they announced Champion Edition last year for iOS, I was like, oh, cool. They're gonna take a stab at more mobile Street Fighter. I'm wondering what's the holdup's been. But as it turned out, it was just kind of like a heavily updated and improved version of the original game from, you know, 8 years ago or whatever. So I don't know. I liked it for what it is because I like the original games, and I'm just happy to have sort of a modernized version of them. But at the same time, I'm like, what are you guys doing? Like, look at the games that come out on mobile nowadays, and look at the visuals and stuff like that, and look at the strides that fighting games have made. Even in making themselves more mobile friendly with stuff like Contest of Champions or Injustice or whatever. And you're just going to kind of like slap this super old game onto new hardware with some bonus stuff, which is fine. Like I said, I like it. I still play it and it plays great still and all that good stuff. But it just seems like, what are you guys doing? Like, come out with a brand new original mobile Street Fighter and, you know, tie it into all the Street Fighter V stuff that's going on console. And I just never understood why they didn't do something like that. So,
well, I feel like everything you said is a perfect metaphor for how Street Fighter has gone on on consoles. True. That, you know, it's this game that's still very like esoteric. If you don't understand like the language of the game, even just pulling off the special moves is difficult if you don't know how to do it. But
yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
And that's where these games like Contest of Champions, I think, have really turned a lot of people that wouldn't normally touch a normal fighting game because of how complex they are into sort of fighting game fans with their sort of simplified mobile versions and stuff. And I like those swipe fighters and I like traditional fighters, too. But I would kill for like a Street Fighter, you know, simplified swipe fighter where you could collect different characters and outfits and all that free to play junk they want to throw in there. But I mean, if they made the fighting tight in it, I'd gobble that up because I love everything Street Fighter. So I don't know why they don't do that, Capcom, but maybe they will someday. But yeah, as of right now,
I was going to say, just take the business model from Puzzle Fighter and apply that to a Street Fighter game.
Seriously. I mean, it seems to have worked for Puzzle Fighter, so. Yeah, I don't know what they're doing, but that's nothing new for Capcom over the years. but anyway, Street Fighter for Android this month. Look for it. That's exciting news for Android people. Real quick, Sid Meier's Civilization VI for the iPad is half off again. This launched, I want to say, mid-December or towards late December for the iPad only. And is the full Civilization VI from desktop that just launched in 2016. So barely a year after it was released, it made its way to iPad, mostly intact, which was super impressive at the time. And so the other crazy thing about this launching was that they are charging the same price on mobile as they were on desktop. So its normal price was $60, which is like, wow. That's a lot of money for a mobile game, right?
Bold.
But it's the full same game as desktop, in, for the most part. So why shouldn't you pay the same price, I always say. But of course, that's kind of a sticker shock price for mobile gamers that are used to paying, you know, less than $5 for stuff. So anyway, it launched at a half off discount. So for the first couple weeks, you could get it for $30, and then it jumped up to the $60. And so if you missed out on that, they are running another half off sale, I think through March 1st. And so you have another couple of weeks here to get it for $30 if you want. And it's free to download and try. And then it has a IAP unlock for the full game. And that's the part that's half off. So, you know, it needs some pretty beefy iPad specs to be able to run this thing. And so if you're curious about how it runs on your iPad, download the free thing and try it out. And if you like it, you can get it for $30 right now. So it's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised if like $30 becomes like the regular price for that, or if it's kind of like perma sale.
That's the other thing. I kind of forgot to mention this, but it was going through my head when I wrote that story was, because it's kind of coincides with the launch of the DLC expansion on the desktop version. And so I was like, okay, well, that makes sense to put the mobile version on sale. Cool. But then I was kind of like, man, I wonder if what their sales are like at 60, and if that has anything to do with them dropping the price again, or if, you know, I'd just be curious to know how many people have bought it at that full $60 price. Because, yeah, I kind of agree with you. Like, even though it is the full game and mostly the same as the PC version, $30 still feels like the most premium price for like a full game on mobile. So I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised to see it kind of settle in at that point. But I bet they do at least raise it up at the end of this sale period and then kind of see what happens. But so if you miss out on this particular sale, I wouldn't be surprised to see it go on sale again or even settle in at that price at some point. But yeah, it's interesting pricing thing. I think the sad thing will be the day that it drops to 99 cents. Let's hope that doesn't happen.
Well, hey, at least the counterpoint to that is that, hey, that'll be pretty sweet if you can get Civilization VI for 99 cents.
That's true. It's so hard. It's so hard being on both sides of the mobile coin because as a gamer, I'm like, heck yeah, I want a game for 99 cents. Cool. And then as someone that's just sort of a mobile gaming advocate, I'm like, come on, you jerks, pay more than $5 for stuff. But I don't know. Yeah, so it's kind of like I get excited for both things. But yeah, if that thing ever drops to, I would say even if it drops below $10, that means that they're hitting the panic button and trying to make some money on it. But
also at that point, that's insta-buy.
Yeah, that's super insta-buy price. So another story this week was that the Dina CEO says that Mario Kart Tour will be free to start on mobile. Mario Kart Tour was announced the end of last month and kind of was sort of a surprising announcement because there was very little details. It was sort of like Nintendo just saying, hey, a Mario Kart is coming to mobile at some point between now and 1 year from now. And this is the name of it and that's it. And so it's kind of led to a flurry of speculation of what kind of Mario Kart this is going to be. Is it going to be an actual kind of more traditional racing game like the console games? Or is it going to be like a free-to-play clicker or something like that? I feel like there's so many different ways to go with what they could do, and they all sort of make sense to me. But it remains to be seen what they're actually going to do. But one of the topics of discussion was what's the pricing going to be? Because as we saw, Super Mario Run, when it launched, was free to try with a $10 unlock. And it did okay, but it didn't do what Nintendo was hoping it would do. And it had a couple sales since then. I think it's overall been a success, but not up to what they were hoping it would be. And then on the other hand, you have Fire Emblem Heroes, which has just been making money like it's going out of style. And it's a more traditional free-to-play sort of game with gacha stuff and, you know, whatever, all that fun stuff. And then sort of same thing with Animal Crossing Pocket Camp, which launched, 2 or 3 months ago now. And that, I think, has been maybe not quite the level of Fire Emblem Heroes, but I think it's been a more, you know, a moneymaker more so than Mario has on mobile. And so The DNA. I always get that screwed up. I called them Dina for years, but it is DNA. Says it will be free to start. And so that wording to me tells me it's going to be more along the lines of Mario Run with some free stuff to try out. And then, you know, like a full unlock sort of thing. That still doesn't answer the question of what type of game it will be. But I don't know. That makes sense to me. personally, I think when they bring in their heavy hitter characters like the Marios and the Zeldas and the Metroids, they're not going to jimmy jack around with some crazy free to play stuff that could kind of alienate the many, many fans they have of those characters. I feel like Fire Emblem has its pretty hardcore base of fans, but not to the point where they're going to see a free to play game based around it and then stop playing those games or anything like that. But I don't know. I could see the pureness of Mario being sullied by some energy mechanics and stuff. So they might not go that route. I'm not surprised to see them do this free to try stuff. I don't know. What's your take on this?
I don't know. I'm surprised that they're doing it again after kind of the disappointing performance of Super Mario Run, where you kind of figured this game is going to be, you know, gangbusters, you know, billion downloads, and it just came nowhere close to that.
Yeah.
But because I feel like for the mass market, they're just not used to the quote unquote free to start business model. They're used to either you pay for a game up front. Well, people don't do that anymore. But it's usually free, and there's not necessarily any restrictions. There's not necessarily that paywall. It's more of the engineered get you to slowly pay over time. And I feel like there's plenty of racing games out there that could serve as a blueprint for Mario Kart, and it could even be something like Fire Emblem Heroes, which feels a little more generous than a lot of gacha games. You can do a lot of stuff for free, and there's a lot of promotions in Fire Emblem Heroes. I'd be totally fine with something like that. I feel like we've seen how Free to Start worked with Super Mario Run,
right?
And that happening with whatever this Mario Kart game is going to be, unless Nintendo is planning on doing something different, like maybe going with $4.99 as opposed to $9.99 with the unlock price, or
that would make sense.
Yeah, maybe something like that. But it just seems like, you know, we have pretty strong evidence. Just based on the industry itself, there's a reason why freemium unlocks aren't preferred compared to free to play, because it combines kind of the two, you know, the worst case of paid games and free to play. Of free to play, you don't get great conversion rates, but with paid games, people are only able to pay so much.
Yeah,
and we have evidence, you know, from the industry that people don't. Like I said, it's not necessarily a money-making avenue, and we saw with Super Mario Run that it will dampen the overall success of the game. But maybe even launching on iOS and Android simultaneously, or changing the price, or the way that changing what free players will get compared to Super Mario Run, maybe that'll work. Or maybe it's just Nintendo thinking, hey, we like free to start better, and you know, it didn't seem, you know, Super Mario Run didn't seem to hurt Switch sales.
So I think they just don't want to be looked at as, like, you know, nickel and diming scumbags, or, you know, scamming people or anything like that. They're such a family friendly company that, you know, free to play gets compared to gambling so much and things like that. I think they just want to stay away from that sort of thing with their precious characters like Mario. But there's so many factors to this whole situation. And as like, you know, as you said, over the years, we've seen the free plus one premium unlock thing fail over and over and over. And it's kind of frustrating because the sort of people that hang out on Touch Arcade are the sort of people that don't like free to play and advocate for something like a free plus one time unlock sort of thing. And it's hard because those people are really in the minority. And so when a game goes with that model, I've seen it time and time again where people are just confused on what it is, especially people that download games on their phone that maybe aren't necessarily gamers. Because, I mean, people like us can look at shareware models that have been around for decades, and that's sort of what that feels like to me. But somebody that downloads a game on their mobile and it's like, cool, this is fun, I'm having a great time, blah, 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 and then all of a sudden get a screen that's like, unlock the rest for whatever money. That's a sour experience for them, and it turns them off, and you've seen the negative reviews, you know, to reflect that, to where they feel like they were tricked or something like that. They thought it was this free game, and it's actually not. They just don't understand the process, which isn't really anyone's fault. But, you know, when you're a gamer, first and foremost, for many years, that sort of thing makes sense, and it seems like an easy call. Like, of course, it's the best for everyone's, you know, situation. We get to try it for free. If we like it, we get to pay for it. If we don't, we're not out anything. I mean, it seems like it'd be the best for everybody. But we've seen it just go the other way time and time again. And same thing with Super Mario Run. Although with Super Mario Run, I feel like Nintendo didn't do a great job at offering like a free portion. I feel like the levels didn't adequately kind of show how neat and complex the game could be in like the later game, and some of the the extra stuff that you could do. So part of it might have been a, you know, didn't give a good first impression sort of thing, and then that's why a lot of people didn't buy the full thing. Because I feel like it was kind of funny, about a year after Mario Run launched, I saw a lot of people reflecting on it and being like, you know what, like when this game came out, I was kind of expecting something different. I sort of turned off to it, blah, blah, blah. And then I went back to it and sort of appreciated it for what it is. And now it's like one of my favorite games. And I think that's true for a lot of people. Mario Run's actually a really great game if you're not trying to get a normal console Mario game. And yeah, I just don't think Nintendo's free offering was the best for that. But another factor that I've always said plays into something like this is that with mobile, immediate gratification, I guess, is one of those things that it plays a big part in what people buy and download and stuff like that. And so if you're like a pretty heavy gamer and you see new games come out, you instantly want to try them just to see what they're like. And if you're a paid game up front, people will oftentimes cave to just get the experience of what the game is like because games are so cheap. So if you're a $5 brand new paid game and somebody sees it and is like, that looks cool, I don't know if it's good or not, but, you know, whatever, $5, I'm going to try it out. And then whether you like it or not, you've pretty much bought it unless you're going to go through the refund process, which a lot of people don't do. And so I've always said a problem with the free with Unlock is that you're giving people that taste without asking them any money from them. And so, you know, with mobile gaming, so many games coming out all the time, so many people bouncing between new games or downloading things they never even launch, it's kind of hard to say, like, okay, here's the experience of trying the game and seeing what it's like, and now later on, give us some money, will you? Because someone might not even play that game again for the rest of their life. They might try it 5 minutes and never play again, even if they like it. So I feel like it's really key to get that money up front, and that's one of the big reasons that you know, this model hasn't worked out, but I don't know. What do I know? Just a guy.
You're a guy that's been around mobile gaming for for years, you know.
You know, I feel like this is the sort of thing people charge for, to give advice to developers about.
We should.
But hey, you get it for free on the Tetracade show. Just one of the benefits of being a Tetracadian. And final story I've got here to talk about. Stugan is happening again. I guess that's how you pronounce that. This is a game accelerator, which, man, this thing has always blown my mind. I think the first one was 2015, and then they've done it every year since. But basically, you sign up, and all you need to pay for is airfare, and then they fly you to Sweden. And then you spend 2 months in this sort of this cabin in the woods in Sweden that's right along a lake, and it's very desolate. And you spend 2 months out there with, you know, other game developers like yourself, and you make kind of whatever game that you want to make. And then there's a bunch of kind of like industry heavyweights that kind of will pop in and guide you and mentor you and things like that. And it's just such a neat idea. Like, I'm not a game developer, but I'm like, can I go to this? I want to go spend 2 months in the Swedish woods. But yeah, it is for developers only, and you do have to apply. And you have to apply via actually pitching your game idea. So you can't just be like, I don't know, I'll get there and make something. You got to have, like, you know, something in mind that you want to make. They frame it as, you know, come make your dream game, the game you've always wanted to make. So if you've had a dream game in mind and you have some developer skills, but you just kind of need that extra, I don't know, motivation or, you know, teaching that will get you over the hump, this might be the way to do it. And I mean, it's 2 months. That seems like an extremely long time, right?
Yeah, especially to be, you know, out in the woods and just focusing on game development. That's a really interesting thing, really unique thing.
It's a really unique thing. And we've already seen several games that started at this this event come out and become full-fledged releases. I actually think Dendara was at one point, the developer went to this. And then there's another game called Prism and a game called Q-Brain that both launched that originated at the Stugan. So, yeah, if you want to check into this, if you're a developer and this sort of thing interests you, they're taking applications now. So you can just enter STUGAN in our search bar on TetraArcade and come up with a story, and it'll give you all the good links to figure out what you need to do. But yeah, just such a cool idea. I feel like we should have one for non-game developers, maybe games writers, where we go spend 2 months in, I don't know, somewhere crazy, Iceland or something.
Yeah. Let's do that.
You're on board, right? You got a lot of disposable income right now, right?
Yeah. You know me. You know me. People get laid off always.
Every time I've ever lost a job in my life, I feel like, not trying to, but I've ended up spending money on dumb, unnecessary things like immediately afterwards. Been like, did I really need to spend $200 on, I don't know, something stupid? And I did. I did anyway. Maybe out of pity. I don't know. So that's about all the news stories I have for today. Should we scoot into some quick game discussion? I'm not timing any of this, so I don't know how long we've been going. I don't know if you have that info available.
Yeah, we've been going for about 40 minutes now, I think.
40 minutes. Wow. We are going to keep this short, but as is always happens, we end up blabbing. I mostly end up blabbing a lot. It takes forever. So, big release week, though. I feel like we have to at least hit on a couple of these things here. So we mentioned it before. I guess we could talk about Dandara. This is a Metroidvania, and if you aren't aware, Metroidvania just kind of means a game where you're playing in one big world that's all kind of interconnected. And then, you know, certain areas of the world will be blocked off to you until you get a certain item or a certain weapon or something like that. And then you can go back and enter that previously inaccessible area. And so you slowly kind of work your way through the game, working back and forth, unlocking new accessible areas and getting new abilities. And it's basically one of my favorite types of games because it just feels like this one cohesive big world. And nothing's cooler than being like, oh, what's behind that door? Oh, I can't open it yet. You know, and then coming back later and being like, oh, that's what opens that door. I can't wait to go check that out. It really just works well as a game type. And, you know, some of the classics like Castlevania Symphony of the Night, I think, is the one that really kind of sticks out in everyone's mind as like the Metroidvania. But yeah, Dandara is a new one of those, and it's a very, very good one of those. And all the things I just said apply to it, but I think the most unique thing is that the way that you move through the world. So, you know, something like Symphony of the Night is a pretty standard platforming game. You jump up and down and you whip and you throw weapons and there's normal gravity and things like that. It's very much a platformer. This one I'd call a platformer, but not like anyone I've ever seen before, in that you actually move around the world by sort of like jumping from spot to spot. And those spots can be on the floor, ceiling, or walls. And then in addition to that, at pretty much any moment, an entire level can just sort of shift its point of view. It'll rotate. And so what used to be the floor is now the wall or now the ceiling or whatever. And because you have this sort of like wall clinging ability, there is no real true up and down in this game. You're kind of just bouncing all around. And that gives it this really kind of cool free-flowing, you know, vibe. As opposed to just, you know, up is up and down is down. And the way that they've mapped these controls to the touchscreen is really cool. You know, one, if you picture it like a dual stick shooter, you know, one side is moving and jumping around to different platforms, or different, you know, stick points, I guess they're called. And then the other side is kind of firing your weapon. And so it's tricky at first. But once you start to warm up to it, it's really, really impressive how quickly you can move through this game. I remember when I first saw this game was, well, besides just in trailers, is when you mentioned we saw it at GDC last year. That was the first time I'd actually played a Switch, too. And so I played the Switch version, and I was like, man, this seems like clunky, like, you know, you're going to be like stopping every 2 seconds to kind of figure out where to shoot to next and stuff like that. I thought it was really going to kind of bring the action to a halt. And that's not the case at all. I don't know what magic they perform, but they've got it down to where you can kind of bounce in between, you know, the sticky spots super quickly. And then you can fire and get in, you know, have all the action happen all at the same time as you're moving. And so once you get used to these controls, it kind of just feels like you're this whirling dervish of awesomeness. And yeah, I don't know. I don't know what they did, but it's tricky at first, but stick with it, because once everything clicks, you're just like, damn, every game should be like this. Every game should have this sort of fluid motion and stuff. And so it's really impressive.
Yeah, yeah, I pretty much agree with everything you said there. Yeah, especially like I think early on you got to give it a little bit of time. You have to you have to get used to the controls. I still prefer the touch controls, but I do get a bit more comfortable with the joystick controls over time. You have to get used to the movement. Also, the game isn't necessarily easy, and at the beginning in particular, it kind of throws you into the world. And it's like, okay, you go figure it out.
Right.
So it's a little old school in that sort of way, despite this sort of new school way. It's great with touch controls and you're bouncing all over the place. So you have to have a little bit of patience for it, but it's definitely very rewarding the more you play it.
Yeah, and that's something that I've seen become sort of a trend, especially in mobile gaming or whatever, but kind of all gaming at large, really, is I see a lot of people that are just like, get stuck somewhere and then instantly are like, what the hell, man? Like, I can't get past this part. Like, this game's stupid. Like, blah, blah, blah. Like, getting really frustrated whenever a game kind of like puts up a challenge barrier. And I'm not even talking about like, you know, absurd arcade challenge or, you know, whatever, something designed to suck quarters out or whatever. I'm just talking about like, you know, especially in a Metroidvania, it's like, I've seen a lot of people be like, I don't know where to go and I don't know what I'm supposed to do next. And I feel like I've been everywhere and now I'm just frustrated. And it's like, man, that's part of the game. God, I can't even tell you how many games I've wandered the same halls for days sometimes before I finally figured out like, oh crap, there's a little nook there that I never noticed before. And that's where I'm supposed to go or, you know, whatever. And I feel like Dandara is really in that same sort of camp where it's like you can feel like you've exhausted all possibilities and there's the game's broken or something. But it's not. You'll figure it out and you'll figure out what to do next. And, you know, besides just that, it's also quite a challenge in terms of like the boss fights and stuff like that, where it's like you're going to get to a boss and you're probably going to die like the first time you try it or maybe the second or the 10th time. But it's one of those games where you will learn what to do. You'll learn your mistakes. You'll learn the techniques to deal with each boss, and then you'll come out ahead eventually, and it's going to feel really good. And so don't rob yourself of that by, you know, only playing games that you just march from the beginning to end with very little resistance and feel like that was cool. Games should challenge you. And so Dandara definitely does that.
You know, Jared, thinking about games that challenge you, have you played Dig Dog at all?
Oh, what a transition, Carter. You have not lost a step, my friend. Dig Dog, I played a little bit, but you played much more because you reviewed it and seemed like you liked it.
Yeah. It's a solid little game. If you like roguelike platformers, it's kind of little Spelunky-esque as far as you have gold you pick up in their shops and there's a whole digging mechanic to it. It's a very, very simple game. You only have a few actions that you can do and there's a few enemy types, but it's really brutal, but it's a lot of fun. You only have two hearts and you know each piece of damage that you take takes away a heart, so you have to be very careful. But the scope of the game is such that, you know, if you die, then it's, you know, you can pick it up, you can pick it back up real quickly. And in the game's bone hunt mode, just the primary like roguelike mode, there's like checkpoints that if you collect, you know, the bone for this certain world a certain number of times, and you unlock it, and you can start from there. But you might want to start from an earlier one because you can pick up power-ups in the shop that'll make you more powerful, but then you also have to be concerned about, you know, taking damage because it's not necessarily an easy game at any point. But it's a lot of fun. It's by Rusty Moyer, who's done a bunch of stuff. Retro Game Crunch on PC. The Astro Duel and Astro Party games.
Those are awesome.
I know he's done a few other things on mobile, but But what's interesting is that, and I saw this in the story, I didn't even see it before I reviewed it, that he apparently made this game like entirely through speech to text and like this eye tracker.
I'm still trying to comprehend this because you mentioned the story before you started recording and I was like, what? That is awesome. And so we are going to, at some point today, we'll post this on the site too, but this is fascinating to me. He made the entire game without his hands. Like, what?
Yeah, apparently he suffers from like a, you know, like basically a carpal tunnel syndrome, repetitive stress injury in his wrist, and he wanted to, you know, make a game that that wouldn't trigger that. And he found tools online. People had been learning to code, you know, you're using, I think, just like Dragon naturally speaking. And just he set up his coding software and this eye tracker so that he made the entire game without typing like a single keystroke. The only thing he had to use his hands for was to actually test the game. But yeah, it is really, really impressive because he made even all the art in the game with just like his eye tracker. And it's a very, you know, simple style, simple pixel art, very like monochromatic, but yeah. it's an effective visual style that works, you know, nothing,
yeah.
You know, he uses black and white in very clear ways. And, you know, you could tell the enemies from the environments and things like that. And that makes it just even more impressive of like, you know, this is a solid roguelike platformer, but the fact that it was made under such unique circumstances, like, wow.
Yeah, I've been doing Tetracade for almost 8 years now, and I'm always constantly worried about me jacking up my wrists or the carpal tunnel stuff or whatever, and I often have, you know, messed up wrists, you know, pain if I type too long or whatever, and I'm a trackpad junkie too with my MacBook, so that I feel like works out some muscles that aren't meant to be worked out in those ways. And so, if I could, like, figure out a way to do a lot of my day-to-day stuff that takes typing and trackpadding and just do it with voice commands and stuff like that. Like, man, that could be a game changer, not just in making games, but in just doing any computer work. So that's just amazing to me that he would even think to find a solution to something like that, and that there's actual ways to make that solution work. But yeah, just super fascinating story, in addition to the game being good. So very cool. We'll definitely talk a little bit more about that story and post it up on the site. So by the time this is posted, you should see a story on our front page about it. But definitely check it out. That was a really cool aspect of the Dig Dog development that I did not even know about. So very cool. And what else do we? Oh, duh! Come on, Final Fantasy 15 Pocket came out this week. That's kind of crazy to me because, you know, when they announced this, first of all, when they announced this, I was like, what? Like, this is a thing? Square Enix took the entire Final Fantasy 15, redid the art style in this more toned down, sort of mobile friendly, chibi, shrunken, super deformed, whatever you want to call it, art style. But it's basically the entire Final Fantasy 15 that's on consoles and maybe on PC yet, soon to come to PC, whatever.
Soon, yeah.
But it's a huge game. I mean, this is even bigger than something like, you know, Civilization VI. In terms of just, it was a massive open world game on consoles, current gen consoles. They shrunk it down. They added just a different art style so it would run better on mobile stuff. They heavily streamlined things, so it's not quite an open world game in the Pocket Edition. But as you can read in Sean's review, it's almost better for it. A lot of people playing Final Fantasy 15 on console, you definitely saw some divisive sort of feelings about the game, where some people really enjoyed that you could go, you know, dick around and do side quests and kind of get off track for a long time doing whatever, sort of like a Grand Theft Auto game. Some people did not like that. They wanted a more focused experience. And so Final Fantasy 15 Pocket Edition is sort of that. It's sort of the Final Fantasy 15 console game, but streamlined and more focused on the story, kind of keeps you on track more, cut out a bunch of the side quest stuff and a bunch of the goofing off things that you could do in the console version, but ended up almost being a better experience for that. And, you know, better could be subjective. You might love the console version and you might hate the, you know, restrictions of this Pocket version. But at the very least, they're also very different experiences. So if you've played the console version to death, you might still like another run through of the Pocket Edition because it is such a focused experience and it kind of lets you run through the game again. And I don't know, I feel like you can get a lot out of that. So very interesting tactic from Square Enix. I've never heard I can't like think of another example of something like this, unless you think of something like Injustice 2 or whatever, which was like their streamlined version of the full fighting game on consoles.
But even then, like, that's like just a completely different experience. This is
pretty much, yeah,
yeah, yeah. This is Final Fantasy 15 abridged, pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, it's all the same voice dialogue. It's the same story. It's most the same, like, cutscenes, just done in the new graphic style. It's most the same environment. I mean, it's really kind of incredible how much that they captured of the original game and brought to mobile in a not sketchy way that runs like crap, or, you know, it's just the controls have been revamped for touch, so it's everything's kind of like tap to move and tap to attack, and all the menus and stuff are all touch friendly, and it just feels like, I think Sean might have even mentioned this in his review, but it was just like, if the console version had never existed and this just launched as is, as Final Fantasy 15 for mobile phones, it'd be amazing. It'd be a great Final Fantasy experience. It's almost not doing it justice by having to compare it to its bigger brother, because it's such a neat mobilized experience of a full kind of RPG. So I don't know. It's just kind of crazy that they did this at all. But I'm happy that they did, and people seem to dig the game. And the pay model is even really cool. It's free to download. You get the first chapter, and then each chapter, you know, additional chapters available as separate in-app purchases, or you can just buy the whole thing for $20, which I think will save you a couple bucks in the long run as opposed to buying everything separately. But either way, it's like full console game for $20 is pretty crazy with, you know, very few concessions. Kind of nuts to me that this thing exists.
Yeah, and I'm going to have to check this out this weekend. I haven't had a chance to play it yet. And, you know, and Final Fantasy 15 is a game I might not necessarily touch on console, but now with, right, you know, this, you know, having it on mobile, having it as a free download to try out, I'm like, well, let me see what the hype's about.
Yeah, that's kind of my thing too, is I've played, I'm not like a crazy Final Fantasy nut or anything like that, but I always, you know, I dabbled with the old ones on Nintendo and Super Nintendo, and then played 7, obviously. But then after that, kind of didn't really mess with one until they did the 3D remakes on the DS probably 10-ish years ago. And those actually came to mobile too, Final Fantasy 3 and 4. And I just really liked those. I liked them remade in 3D like that. I liked them feeling more modern, because the old original games are kind of hard for me to go back to now. And so this sort of feels like that same similar kind of experience, enjoying a full 3D game, but it's a Final Fantasy game. Although I guess Final Fantasy 15 on console even is pretty radical departure for the series, just in terms of it being more of like an action RPG and more open world and whatever. But I don't know. I'm excited to check this out, whereas normally I'm just like, oh, another Final Fantasy re-release on mobile. Sean will do something with that. I can just ignore it. This one is more like, cool, I'm excited to actually play through this game. And like you, I probably never would have got it on console. So this actually gives me a chance to experience it, which is pretty neat. So yeah, Final Fantasy 15 Pocket Edition. Check it out. Free to download and try. And we talked about Dig Dog Treasure Hunter, which is not free. I think it's $3, but no in-app purchases or anything like that. Very cool roguelike platformer. And Dandara, which is currently $15 on any video game platform that exists, pretty much.
Yeah.
And so that's a super good premium game experience, especially if you like Metroidvanias. Definitely give Dandara a look. I think maybe that is where we should draw the line on this podcast. What do you think?
Yeah, we've been gabbing for a while here.
We've been gabbing for a while. So as I drive this puppy home, let me thank you all for joining us this week on the Touch Arcade Show. And like I mentioned at the top of the post, our website and our podcast and everything we do at Touch Arcade is primarily supported through Patreon. So if you enjoy what we do and you'd like to support us, please visit patreon.com/TouchArcade. And for as little as $1 per month, you can get access to cool things like a video podcast, which we should be back with next week, and a couple other cool perks that you can get by being a Patreon subscriber. And we're always working on new things too to kind of bring more value to doing that. But yeah, basically kind of keeps the site running. We look at it as like a magazine subscription for a magazine you like, except Touch Arcade updates every day and get way more up to date and more content than you would with a magazine. So you can also, if Patreon is not your thing, You can support us via doing your Amazon shopping through our Amazon link, which you can just go to toucharcade.com/Amazon. Click that link. It'll take you through to Amazon, buy whatever you're going to buy. And we'll get a little tiny slice of that, which isn't much on its own. But if enough people do it, it can actually add up to being pretty substantial. And so if you're going to buy stuff on Amazon anyway, why not do it through our link and help us out a little bit too? And we are constantly posting, you know, deals for different things that are kind of mobile gaming related on our site. You know, phone chargers and I don't know, MFI controllers and whatever the other things we see through Amazon that are maybe geared towards people that read our website, we will post on our site as, you know, a heads up about a deal or whatever. And so always consider checking those out too. You can also find us on twitter.com/TouchArcade. We have a Twitch account, twitch.com/TouchArcade. We have a Discord, which is discord.gg/TouchArcade. And that's kind of a fun place to hang out. And a lot of developers hang out in there too. So if you want to do some mobile gaming chat, check out our Discord. Am I forgetting anything? Gosh, I don't normally do this.
I think you mentioned a lot of channels there.
I mentioned a lot of stuff. Eli, I think, writes it all down so you can go down the list. I usually just tune it all out anyway, so who knows if I'm doing this right. But anyway, thanks again for joining us on this week's episode, and Eli should be back for next week's episode. So until then, we will see you next week on another episode of the Touch Arcade Show.